Yellowstone National Park was established in 1872. It is home of 3,500 miles of rolling hills, breathtaking waterfalls, spurting geysers, and iridescent hot springs. While being mostly located in Wyoming, the park also spans both Montana and Idaho. In all, the park is larger than the state of Rhode Island, and driving from one end to another can be a time-consuming process. However, the stellar views of snow-capped mountains, grazing bison, and bears on the hunt can make the travel go by in the blink of an eye. While Yellowstone is a hub of beauty and history, something sinister lurks below the surface. There are tales of horror-filled hauntings and fantastical legends in and around the park. Tales of gruesome deaths and magic. My name is Allison Giordano, and in May 2019, I took a trip to Yellowstone to investigate the truth of these spooky stories for myself. The following stories are based on first-person accounts and research of Yellowstone National Park, but are only as factual as you're willing to suspend your disbelief. Whether you are a believer in the supernatural and you're looking for evidence of ghosts and ghouls that haunt the historic park, or you're a skeptic in search of a good story, indulge in the hauntings and legends of Yellowstone National Park with me. Story 1, The Headless Bride. The Old Faithful Inn sits on the edge of the Upper Geyser Basin at Yellowstone National Park, just spitting distance away from the famous Old Faithful Geyser. And it does spit. Just about every hour and 45 minutes, the Old Faithful Geyser will shoot streams of water out from the bleached dirt and into the air, nearly 180 feet. The inn makes for the best place to view the eruptions. From the deck on the second floor, you can sit and watch as the geyser steams and bursts. The roar of the shooting streams makes for a peaceful soundtrack as you take in the splendor of the Upper Geyser Basin. Springs litter the grounds there, like puddles on the road, but these puddles are brilliant shades of turquoise or rust red, or both, creating rings of color around the pools. Some bubble and burst, others are smooth as glass. Some are muddied, while others are so clear that appears to have been chlorinated, and so blue that it would put the Caribbean to shame. The natural beauty of the environment is breathtaking. But the man-made structure that sits beside it is one of incomparable beauty.
And you also want two keys, I take it?
The Old Faithful Inn is any kid's Lincoln Log daydream. Dark as chocolate and tall as the surrounding forest, the inn is made of nearly 10,000 trees. They are the columns that hold the building together. They line the walls and ceilings. They're what the staircase is carved from, and they're woven into the architecture and decoration. There's a large clock that hangs on the stone fireplace, so tall that you have to be on the third floor to look it in the face, and on the first floor to see the bottom of the swinging pendulum. With such an expansive history, it's no surprise that there are whispers going down the halls of the Old Faithful Inn that tell of ghosts that haunt the stunning structure. There are known to be two, one much more famous than the other.
There is one very famous ghost story of Old Faithful Inn about the Headless Bride.
That's Ruth Quinn. She's worked for the Old Faithful Inn for many years now and knows all the stories.
But it became very famous, and it used to be told on the tours. And one of my coworkers, Betty Hardy, used to tell the story about the Headless Bride, and she told it so well that standing in one part of the building, you could hear her entire group in unison sucking breath at the same time. And she did this so well. I'm afraid one year she frightened some children who complained to the management, and that got back to our boss, and our boss said, no more ghost stories.
The story goes that a wealthy daughter of a New York City tycoon married a much older and much poorer man that worked for her family. It was 1915 when they wed, and they set out to celebrate with a honeymoon at the Old Faithful Inn. They had a pleasant couple of days staying in room 127. But one night, their raised voices, shouting of money or lack thereof, were heard by the other hotel guests in the neighboring rooms. The husband seemed to have stormed out shortly after. A few days went by, and there was no sign of his bride. Staff started to get suspicious, and eventually they felt it necessary to go into their room. They found the wife still inside, beheaded, sprawled out on the bed with blood seeping through the sheets and staining the mattress. It wasn't until they searched the crow's nest, the inn's rooftop overlook of the Old Faithful geyser, that they found her head. It was laying up there, viewing the magnificent geyser eruptions with her dead eyes wide open. Even a century after the tragedy, long after the young woman had been laid to rest, some say her spirit still resides in the hotel. Employees and guests claim that at the stroke of midnight, you can see the woman floating down the stairs from the crow's nest, carrying her own head underneath her arm. She's not malicious, never terrorizing the living or really interacting at all. Instead, she seems forlorn. Her painted lips are turned down into a frown, and her black eyes are cataract with sadness, as if even after all this time, she's still contemplating her own ghastly fate. While the hair on the back of your neck may be standing on end as a chill crawls down your spine, you may take solace in the fact that there is irrefutable evidence that this spooky story was made up in its entirety.
George Borneman was a bellman here at the time, and he was, as I understand it, being pestered by newspaper reporters to tell a ghost story, and he was not being cooperative, and they kept pestering him and kept pestering him. So George just made up an elaborate story about the headless bride, and they said, oh, this is great, when did this happen? They're writing furiously, and he said, it never happened, I just made it up. And so it went in the newspaper with everything except that last line. And that's how it became the famous story.
That being said, there are many accounts of other things going bump in the night. Some even insisting that the figure they saw drifting down the dim hallway was a woman with her own head tucked underneath her arm. Though others think that it's a different spirit entirely, one that haunts room 2. Doors opening and slamming shut, fire hydrants turning on their axis, and a woman floating at the end of the bed, scaring a hotel guest so badly that her fingernail marks, which she dug deep into her husband's arm out of fear, was still prominently there the next morning. These instances and more have been reported in room 2 of the old house, one of the original rooms of the illustrious hotel. Dark walls and dim lighting of the inn, though awe-inspiring in contrast with the brilliant architecture of the hotel, was definitely eerie. However, when I got to see room 2 from the outside, I have to admit, it did not seem any more sinister than any other part of the inn. And Ruth agrees.
I've never thought that we had any resident ghosts in Old Faithful Inn, because people report seeing and feeling different things in different places of the building never seems to be exactly the same. Somebody will say, I felt like I wasn't alone in the room, or I felt like a cat jumped on the bed. Something like that, I think, is more what people experience.
Even the suggestion of the horrifying happenings of the Old Faithful Inn is enough to get my imagination running wild. As for Ruth, she thinks that most of what people say about the Old Faithful Inn is just that, their imagination.
People who are sensitive to such things have had experiences here in the inn. Typically leave it at that.
So, are some of the stories true? That is yet to be seen, and if Ruth knows for sure, she certainly isn't letting on.
So one time I asked Betty, when she was no longer allowed to tell the ghost story, what did she do then? And she said, well, I ask people, do you believe in ghosts? And if they say yes, I say, well, of course we have ghosts. And if they say, no, I don't believe in ghosts, of course we don't have ghosts. People do experience unusual feelings here sometimes. So I don't know how else to say that.
Maybe the answer is lying in wait in the darkest corner of room 2. Or maybe it's in the nearby geysers whose boiling temperatures have taken too many lives. Those who do not heed Yellowstone National Park's warnings about the danger of thermal areas, a consequence of the exquisite scenery. One thing is for sure. Should you stay a night at the Old Faithful Inn, your eyes will feast on views of mythic proportions, even if there are no apparitions to be seen. Story 2, Fenn's Treasure, voiced by Jacqueline Giordano.
In the way of legends, the story of Forrest Fenn's treasure is one of the most exciting. Imagine Indiana Jones with a vague map and a broken list of clues to a multi-million dollar treasure. But now, the difference is that Indiana Jones turns to you and says, okay, now find it. That's about how the Fenn treasure came about. But instead of Harrison Ford, we have Forrest Fenn, a hero in his own right. He was an Air Force veteran, surviving 328 combat missions, fighting in the Vietnam War, and receiving the Silver Star Medal. But his accolades don't stop at his military career either. He went on to be a well-known art collector, even opening his own gallery in Santa Fe, New Mexico, in 1973 that served impressive celebrity clientele, like Steven Spielberg. But after years of happiness, family, and success in New Mexico, things took a turn for the worse when he received a cancer diagnosis. After years of traveling around the globe, fighting for his country, and years of curating art from all different cultures, he was fueled with a desire to leave an impact on the world the way it had left an impact on him. And to Forrest Fenn, this meant treasure. Fenn put together a treasure chest of valuables, from golden nuggets and precious gems to profitable art from his collection, with the intention of taking it up to the mountains when he thought his life was coming to an end. But he was lucky enough to go into remission, and he never had a need to take the treasure with him. Fenn got better, and the treasure sat idle for 2 decades, until 2010.
The only treasure chase we have going on now is from an older gentleman that used to live here, Fenn.
Meet Jerry Johnson. Over the past 24 years, he has intermittently served as mayor of West Yellowstone, Montana, totaling 15 years of mayoral experience.
He's actually related to a couple people that still live in town, and he claims he's buried a treasure in the area, and he has book out.
In 2010, Forrest Fenn released his memoir, The Thrill of the Chase, containing tales of his exhilarating life and a map of the Rocky Mountain region with a poem giving clues to the location of his treasure. He challenged people who may have been facing financial hardship in the face of the recession to go out and find it for themselves. Featured prominently on this map was Yellowstone, with many clues alluding to the national park as the resting place of the 40-pound treasure, like warm waters halting and the canyon down. And from that day forward, Yellowstone has become a maze for treasure hunters from all around the world.
There's people that believe it. And they don't think, I mean, they think it's not very, buried very deep and all this kind of stuff because of the gentleman's age and whatnot. His nephew believes it, and he lives here still. Yeah. He doesn't go looking, but he believes it.
But 9 years have passed already, and still no one has found the golden chest, leading some to believe that maybe the unbelievable treasure never existed in the first place. Allison even asked Jerry Johnson if he thought the treasure was real.
No. I do not. He was 70 years old, and no way he could have done that.
Maybe that's true, but then why would Fenn go through all this trouble for a fictional prize?
I mean, he might have done it for financial reasons. I think he might have done it to sell books.
And now, the hunt has turned deadly. 4 people are known to have died in pursuit of Fenn's prize, The most recent being in 2017, when a man was found in the Rio Grande River. Authorities believe this is four too many and have asked Fenn to stop the chase altogether. He refused, of course, though he did make a public statement encouraging safety. He also divulged some additional clues in the name of safety, guaranteeing that the prize was nowhere near the Rio Grande and not underwater.
And we've lost two people on the National Forest that I know of that have been on rescues for that have died looking for it. They've fallen in rivers. And then the ones that actually get caught searching for it, going off trail and whatnot in Yellowstone, are banned for life.
While there are skeptics who think that too many people are taking risks in the name of a treasure that only allegedly exists, others are deeply invested in the fun, posting their own theories and experiences online. Meanwhile, Fenn, who is now 80 years old, is anxiously waiting for someone to claim the treasure he hid nearly a decade ago. But it may not all be for nothing. Fenn claims that a couple of thrill-seeking adventurers have gotten dangerously close.
Story 3, The Siren. The Norris Geyser Basin at Yellowstone National Park looks like the set of a post-apocalyptic horror film, or Mars. The ground looks like it was once on fire. Steam as thick as smoke billows through the clearing. The dirt is burnt red and bleached, with pools of lagoon blue water bubbling and gurgling to the earth. Runoff trickles in a stream to one of the larger hot springs, leaving trails of turquoise to mar the sunset-colored earth. And even on a nice day with clear skies, the whole basin seems to be covered by smog, and wind howls through the glade. The Porcelain Basin is a vast, flat wasteland with a boardwalk that goes through and loops around the various hot springs there. On the other side is the much larger Back Basin, a 1.6-mile loop that takes you around the 17 thermal features there, each one more fascinating than the last. The veteran geyser roars like a demon shouting in agony from the pits of hell. The Puff and Stuff geyser pops with blasts of hot air. And Ekness geyser wails and boils. But the feature that intrigued me the most was the Green Dragon Spring. It seemed to be calling to me, begging me to step closer and examine it. Steam wafted from the cave there and curled above the ground. It danced in the brisk spring air. Seagreen water flowed from the cave like a river into a pond. The ground was flat, and only a trail beckoned you to stay on the path and to not venture onto the hot thermal area. It was so enticing that I considered taking a step closer to get a better view. There's something special about that area of the park, something that is difficult to put your finger on because it's not tangible. It elicits a feeling of curiosity, a feeling of awe, and a feeling of fear. Magic is in the air at the Norris Geyser Basin, and your instincts are telling you to go and seek out the wonders there. But there is a reason why Yellowstone National Park has such strict rules against visitors stepping off the trails and pedestrian boardwalks, the safe haven for tourists to view the geysers. Many have been so enthralled by the beauty of the basin that they ventured onto the thermal area and fell into the boiling water, which can reach a point beyond 199 degrees Fahrenheit at the surface. It's unfortunate, but many people have died from their injuries and others have gotten third-degree burns. Even the idea of purposely taking a dip in these iridescent pools is something that is well known around Yellowstone, though highly discouraged today.
You know, I tell people all the time that we see in the park what we can only explain as recreational Darwinism.
This is Dave Akers. He's a resident of West Yellowstone and has spent his career guiding tourists through Yellowstone National Park.
It comes in many different forms, but getting off of a boardwalk and walking in a thermal area is dangerous.
People do fall in hot pots. Sometimes they get in them on purpose and get scalded, and some just get scalded, some pass away.
You remember Jerry Johnson, you know, mayor of West Yellowstone.
Those temperatures are pretty extreme in some of them.
You might take the temperature of it, find it to be 100 degrees. You're going, hell, that's perfect. But a little earthquake could send that water to 150 before you could get out of it. And we have earthquakes daily. They say an average of six earthquakes a day.
Due to the hazardous nature of these natural attractions and people interfering with the nature throughout the park, 22 deaths have occurred inside the park since its conception. More than a dozen of these people have died at the Norris Geyser Basin, a fact that is advertised upon entering the area, along with several signs warning of the dangers of touching the boiling hot, acidic water. One of the casualties was Colin Scott, who on June 7th, 2016, died tragically at the geyser. As he and his sister walked a reported 225 yards away from the safe area, Colin slipped into the scalding water there, making it the first geothermal death in the park in 16 years. But a legend has sprung up around the fatalities of the geyser basin, one that is fantastical yet compelling. It brings Greek mythology to the American Midwest. The legend goes that Colin was not inching closer to the mouth of the geyser by his own accord. He was being lured by a siren. There was a spirit there, naked and translucent, hovering just above the geyser pool. He was following the siren's melodic voice through the basin area, off the trail, and onto the thermal area. The hot, acidic water burned his ankles through the now imprinted earth, giving him third-degree burns and chemical burns from the pH levels being so high. But he kept walking towards the spirit, seemingly unaffected. Then he slipped, falling into the bubbling pool and being submerged under the sulfuric water, never to be seen again, and leaving only a flip-flop to be found by the responders. This tall tale does come with an internet age twist. A man claiming that he was there that day and that he had a front row seat to the tragic incident. A Reddit user by the name of Yellowstone Yoda claims to have been one of the first responders at the scene of Colin's accident, and he posted his alleged firsthand account of the situation on the site. Yellowstone Yoda says, "While they may try to silence me and or discredit my claims, I can't sit back in good conscience and let the media spread such blatant fabrications, lies generated by an elaborate cover-up." The user goes on to explain that he saw the creature that hovered above the spring, a nude albino woman of 4 feet with white shoulder-length hair. He included details that directly aligned with the police report, though they could have been reported as well. But the most incriminating of the claims is that the sister had a video of the entire incident, and that is fact. The video was never released to the public, explaining why Yellowstone Yoda insists that it was part of a cover-up, the truth of the incident being hidden from the world. And while a naked albino woman of incredibly short stature may not be what you envision for a vicious siren that preys on the weak will of men, it may still be proof that there is a little bit more to the story than people would like to admit. Native Americans have a name for a vengeful water spirit that lures men to their doom, a water baby. These creatures in Native American religion are said to haunt the lakes and river of the Midwest, particularly in areas surrounding Utah, Idaho, and Nevada. These creatures differ from what we know to be sirens in the fact that they're childlike, their features being young and plump, and they're more often compared to a mermaid because of their fins and tails, which is a step away from the womanly figure of a siren. While this story is much more outlandish than most, the idea of it is intriguing, especially because you cannot dismiss it in its entirety. Maybe it's the fact that the Norris Geyser Basin is a scientific anomaly with its springs reaching record high temperatures and drastic geothermal changes. Or maybe it's the presence of the concentrated microbes and minerals that create the brilliant colors that you see in the springs. Or maybe it's that feeling that I mentioned before, that there's more to Norris than the stunning landscape meets the eye. But anybody who visits the area is in agreement that there's magic in the basin.
Oh, I think the whole place is magical. You know, they called it Wonderland in the old days, and it certainly is. I mean, there's not many places like this. So I think there is a little bit of magic here in a lot of ways. But you know, it's a dangerous place too, and you gotta show it that kind of respect, or it'll turn on you.
When a tragedy like this occurs, one that is so heartbreaking and so random, it's only natural that people search for an explanation that can appease their suffering. That's where I imagine the story of the siren comes from. It's easier to believe that an evil, chaos-inducing creature lay dormant for years in search of the perfect victim than to have to come to terms with the fact that Colin suffered in consequence of a catastrophic accident. It's a funny notion to entertain, maybe even a crazy one, but after seeing this area for myself, there's a sizable part of me that truly thinks there could be something here that beckons you towards danger. And if you're still a skeptic, just look across the open field of blanched dirt, stained red and smoking, and tell me that you don't believe in magic as well.